This is Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Singeri. As the United States was fighting furiously to throw off the shackles of British oppression in the late 1700s, nearly a million people were enslaved in American colonies. That number would reach around 4 million by the 1860 census. So how did Washington, Jefferson, and some of the other founding fathers justify the nation's freedom from England while denying it to the enslaved people? Author and historian Kenneth Davis has written a number of Don't Know Much About books, but his latest sheds light on the lives of five people who were enslaved by four U.S. presidents and gives their perspective on the institution and experience of slavery. I asked Davis why he chose this approach and these five people.
For about 25 years, a little more than that, I've been writing about American history, and I was always perplexed, as many people are, by one very basic question. How could these men that we admire, these men who write words like all men are created equal and fight for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and struggle and sacrifice for it, how do these men then go home to plantations utterly dependent upon enslaved labor? It's the great American contradiction. It is the story that a nation conceived in liberty was also born in shackles. And it has always fascinated me and, as I said, perplexed me. For a long time, I wrote about it from the perspective of the men who were doing the enslaving. And I thought I wanted to flip the narrative at this point and try and write and piece together the story of the other side, the people who were legally the property of men like Washington, Madison, Jefferson, and Jackson.
How were you able to find information on their experiences?
What the difference is between these five people and the vast numbers of millions of other enslaved people who are nameless and faceless in history, these people lived in close proximity to some of the most famous men of their day. Their lives were intertwined, and so we have much more documentation, much more record of their daily life. And in some cases, their actual words and experiences as they told them later in their own lives. So there's a rich trove of information, primary source information about these people who were the property of four of the most famous men in our history. What that allows us to do is have an insight into slavery and what it meant as an institution and what it meant in terms of the daily life of these presidents. It was not only the key to their wealth and power, but it provided them the food on their table, the clothes on their back, as well as in other cases, obviously, notorious cases, some other aspects of their life. But this is the human side of the story that often gets left out when we talk about slavery in terms of words like emancipation, abolition, nullification. Those are the political buzzwords and euphemisms. I wanted to put a human face on this story.
Kenneth, Vermont has always applauded itself for being the first state to outlaw slavery, but that doesn't mean it didn't exist here, right?
That's true, and certainly Vermont has a good claim to being the first constitutionally to outlaw or ban slavery. But there are records clearly that there were enslaved people in the state, and there's not even a clear record of how long that was the case. So I think that Vermont certainly gets credit for its idealism in coming into the United States of America and gets some points detracted for the reality. The other thing one must say, though, of course, about Vermont is that its role in the Civil War was extraordinary. And a high number of Vermonters as a proportion of the population went off to fight. And also the very, very rich story of the Underground Railroad running through places like Troy into Bennington and further north to Canada. So that's another part of this history a little bit later that Vermonts can certainly take pride in.
I've always been under the impression that slavery in colonial America was fairly limited. But how widespread was it and how large was the African-American population of the time?
Rick, this is one of the most important reasons I think I wrote this book, because we do have so many myths and misconceptions about slavery as an institution as well as what it was like on an everyday scale. there was no state of the original 13 that did not have slavery. It wasn't something that was limited to a few misguided folks down south. It was the largest business in the country, perhaps in the world, by 1800. So it was the source of enormous wealth. The numbers, if we look at 1790, the census, about 1 million, just slightly under 1 million enslaved African Americans in the 13 colonies, and they were in every one of them. By 1860, of course, that number has grown to 4 million. And this was the great mistake, flaw, failure of men like Washington, Jefferson, Madison. They believed in their hearts that slavery would eventually die. It was foolish optimism, and it was clearly their worst mistake, and I think the thing that we must fault them most for.
Well, how did these American patriots square fighting for independence from England, yet arguing to maintain the system of slavery?
It was a kind of a schizophrenia, I suppose you might call it, a split personality, because you have Washington clearly for most of his life utterly dependent. He was born into a slave plantation life. He inherited his first enslaved people when he was, I believe, 10 years old and his father died. He inherited his first 11 and continued to acquire slaves over the course of his life. When he marries Martha Dandridge Custis, she brings in perhaps another 200 enslaved people because she is the widow of the most wealthy man in Virginia. And she has this large group of what were known as dower slaves, which meant they essentially still belonged to the Custis estate, but the Washingtons now had control over them. So in 1799, Washington has more than 300 people in his control at five different farms in and around the Mount Vernon plantation. But by that time, he had also begun to be uncomfortable with the idea. His views were clearly evolving. And by 1786, he writes, "No one wishes more than I to see a plan for the abolishment of this practice of slavery." But he does so precious little at the peak of his powers and influence and prestige to bring that about. Partly because he's completely wedded to slavery. It is the source of his wealth. It is the source of the food on his table and the clothes on his back, as well as the source of political power. And this is another important fact that we have to go back to our sixth grade civics class. The Constitution, which Washington presided over, established slavery as a fundamental piece of American Republican democracy because it established what we call the Three-Fifths Compromise. Slaves would be counted in the census for the purpose of determining representation in Congress, and that also meant the number of electors each state had. So Virginia, which was the largest slaveholding state at the time, had many more electors and seats in Congress than it would have had if just the white free population was counted. What does that mean in a practical sense? Four of five first presidents are Virginia slaveholders. Five of the first seven presidents are slaveholders. 10 of the first 12. This represented slave power in America in the first half of the 19th century.
What was the long-lasting impact of that three-fifths rule?
Well, the long-lasting impact of it was that the states that had that advantage, that counted those enslaved people, and of course in places like South Carolina and Georgia, as the cotton boom continued and the numbers expanded so dramatically, even after the foreign slave trade was ended, this meant political power. And it meant that their political power was tied to their financial power. Slaves, enslaved people represented wealth. In many cases, it was the only wealth they had. Many slaveholders, like Washington and certainly like Jefferson, were always in debt because they were cash poor. They had this property, but they were often mortgaged up to the teeth.
Are we still seeing the effects of slavery in this country today?
Without a doubt. We see it in the Black Lives Matter movement and the conversations about what's going on, as in the words of one presidential candidate, the inner cities where it's hell. The aftermath of slavery did not end 150 years ago. This is one of the reasons we study history in the first place, to understand what the connections are between past and present. For centuries, not a short amount of time, for centuries, enslaved African Americans were told they were stupid. They were told they were lazy. They were believed to be dishonest. They were believed to be, in the case of young men, uncontrollable, wild, and dangerous. And these perceptions, these stereotypes carried over after centuries of slavery well into the post-Civil War period and up until modern times. So you can't escape that fact. Most pernicious of all, I believe, and many sociologists would probably accept this as a basic truth, is that slavery also destroyed the most fundamental aspect of the society, the family. There was no marriage as we understand it, even though enslaved people might have a husband or a wife. There was no legal standing for that. There was no document. There was no ceremony in a legal sense of a ceremony. There might be a folk ceremony to do this, but a wife could be sold on the whim of a master. She could also be raped on the whim of a master, whether she was had a husband or not. And of course, her children were property, and they could be taken from her at a moment's notice. This was the destruction and the failure to create a black family over centuries, and we're still living with the legacy of that, and it would be foolish to deny it. Anyone who thinks that the past is dead, the past is never dead.
Kenneth Davis is the author of In the Shadow of Liberty, The Hidden History of Slavery, Four Presidents, and Five Black Lives. Kenneth, thank you so much for telling us about your new book.
Thanks, Rick, for having me. It's always a pleasure.